the bump and run, the Bristol move.
That's aggressive, but it's that's good. Good heart racing.
Oh!
He puts him out of the groove there.
Oh, man!
Will he get the bumper? Yes, he does. Here comes Logano. Logano on the inside. A drag race. They're sideways. And it's going to be Logano getting the win.
The back end of the 18 kick out.
Yeah, he got into it right there.
Moved him out of the way.
It's almost too early to be racing that hard for the lead, wasn't it?
Never too early to be racing for the lead.
At Bristol.
Man, this is one of the biggest wins of my career.
It's the bump and run,
baby!
Yeah, welcome to the Bump and Run podcast. I'm your host, Michael D.Y., joined by my two best friends, Matt the Statman Riley and Eric Daytona Ron. Hope you guys had a great weekend. Hope you guys had yourselves a Chris Buescher type of weekend. He was the big winner down in Richmond. And make sure you like, share, subscribe. Podcast available on all platforms every Monday night, except for the last 3 weeks. Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and more. And every Tuesday morning video available on YouTube. We are recording on Tuesday evening, so everything will be up Tuesday night. Sorry for the delay. But Matt, we got a celebration. Little Jackson.
Yeah, that's my fault. Sorry to throw everyone's schedule off who likes listening to us on Tuesdays. But a year ago yesterday, my wife just decided to, give birth. So we had to celebrate baby Jackson's 1-year-old birthday yesterday. So happy birthday to him. I've just spent like the last, we had a party over the weekend too on Saturday. And I've just spent like the last like 4 days just eating cake. And so I'm all caked out until like Christmas now. But we had a fun weekend doing that.
Very nice. Sorry I missed the birthday party. I was at a bachelor party weekend in the Poconos.
All good. Congrats to our buddy Shifty. I doubt he listens, but congrats to him for getting married soon.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he's ever listened to this show, but big congratulations to him. Eric, what were you doing this weekend? What were you up to?
On Saturday, I went to Outlaw Music Festival in Bethel Woods, the old home of Woodstock.
How was Willie?
Government Mule is kind of what we went into because it was pouring rain there. So we were sitting in the truck drinking some roadies in there before we went in. And Government Mule, they kicked ass. Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats, they were awesome. Nice. And then Willie Nelson was the closer. And I told my girlfriend Dana, I'm like, because we had to drive home at this point in time. And Willie didn't come on until 10-ish, maybe even a little after.
Yeah.
And I go, when he plays Whiskey River, I said we could leave.
The first song.
He opened with Whiskey River.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And I will say this. I was very, very disappointed. I left after that song anyway because I couldn't bring myself to have that memory of Willie Nelson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it was awesome. The crowd went crazy when he showed up, and it was – a privilege to be there to see Willie. He's damn near, he's got him. He might even be 90, but he was off. Like the songs didn't sound like it was supposed to sound, you know what I mean? And I don't know if he warmed up as the songs went on, but we did leave after hearing that first song, just because we had to get home. And you know, I had a couple 2-3 in the infield there. So, or not the infield, in the lawn.
Listen, everything's an infield. Everything's an infield if you try hard enough.
Yeah.
Didn't Willie have something?
You nailed it, by the way. 90 years old.
Didn't he have something with his throat like 2 years ago? Didn't he have
you're 90 and you're going out there trying to perform. I mean,
yeah.
I knew it wasn't gonna be like blow my mind. But you know, he did Whiskey River enough to where I was like, okay, that was cool. That was awesome. But like,
yeah.
I also felt a little bad. Like whoever's that tour manager right now is, it just feels like it's a money grab for whoever's there, you know,
yeah.
Attach Willie to this, whoever, you know, show you're doing and you know, you're going to bring in the money. And it was still a really, really good time. Bethel Woods is absolutely gorgeous venue to go to.
Yeah.
And the people there were great. So it was a good time Saturday.
Yeah, it's disappointing because I saw Willie Nelson in Outlaw Festival when it came to Montage in either 2018 or 2017, and he sounded phenomenal, like good enough where I'm like, I think he's lip syncing. And but I know he had something with his throat a lot the last couple of years. That's why he's all gravelly and slow and stuff. And Willie Nelson is known to just kind of play at his own speed. Like either he's playing it fast or he's playing it slow. It's not going to sound like the album. It's one of those deals. But that is disappointing because I was thinking about, like, if I didn't have that bachelor party, I wanted to go up to Outlaw Fest. I want to see William one last time before he passes, you know? But like you said, he goes on really late. I remember at Montauk, not to get on a tangent about Willie Nelson, but I love Willie Nelson. When we were at Montauk, same deal. He didn't go on until 10 and then, it started to rain. I was like, all right, well, I need to hear, You Were Always On My Mind before I leave. I heard that and I was able to leave like midway through the set. But he's been playing the same set for like 45, 50 years now where he opens with Whiskey River. And I think he actually ends with Whiskey River, but he does it a little bit faster the second time. But yeah, you guys ready to jump into some NASCAR news? Sorry about the tangent.
And that's been our Willie Nelson podcast. Come back next week as we break down Waylon Jennings.
Welcome to the Willie Nelson Family Hour here on the Bumper Run Podcast Network. We got some NASCAR news to talk about. Jesus, this is what happens on a Tuesday show. I lose all the flow. I'm wrong button. Jesus Christ.
Here we go.
Willie Nelson.
Trying
to put on the Willie Nelson.
Did you start playing polka?
No, it's some button that's like built into the roadcaster. It's the music bed. Yeah. Welcome to the Bumper Run Podcast. I'm your host, Michael D. White, joined by my two best friends, Matt the Statman Riley and Eric Daytona Ron. And make sure you get up out of your seat, move your feet to the beat. Come on, baby, let's smack it.
Dude, yeah, we're gonna go off the rails today. We already have. And we're gonna have a fun episode.
I love Tuesdays for that reason sometimes. Like sometimes like it just it's a great show because we're so silly and giddy. Like I told Whitey in the text, my brain is absolute mush today. Yeah. So fans, sit tight and bear with us here.
Pull your belts.
I promise
tight.
We're getting into NASCAR right now.
So it looks like NASCAR is looking to more options to get the car with four flat tires to pit road after the Joey Logano incident at Pocono. Maybe some different type of strapping and whatnot. Yeah, just stupid sons of bitches. If you missed last week's episode, we played the clip of Joey Logano freaking out on the track crew and the wreckers and stuff. This was a big piece of news, completely blindsided this week. The CW Network will become the exclusive home of the NASCAR Xfinity Series in 2025 and extend it through 2031. So a huge six-year deal for the NASCAR Xfinity Series going to broadcast television. I know the CW isn't like the big three or four like Fox, ABC, but it's still over the air and free to everybody. So everybody in the country with the little rabbit ears on their TV will be able to watch the NASCAR Xfinity Series, all 33 races too, full entire season on network TV. What do you guys think about that?
Like Matt said, two thumbs up, man. That it is absolutely a great deal, I think. Like you said, everybody could watch it. You don't have to go. Ton of talk recently about subscriptions and streaming and all of that. Hey, rabbit ears, everybody, 33 races, go watch some Xfinity Series racing.
And maybe this is like, this is the in, right? Like, you get people who have free cable, they check out the Xfinity Series, they start following a driver because they like the action, and then by the time that driver moves up the cup, well, hey, now I'm invested. Now I'm going to go ahead and spend some money for a subscription or whatever I might have to do. So, yeah, I love that Xfinity is going to get their own identity. They're going to be a standalone pretty much. I mean, not in the NASCAR terms of standalone where they're going to be at their own tracks, but they're going to be their own identity with the CW. So, yeah, it looks like the CW is getting more and more into sports as opposed to just a year ago where there was, like, no sports with the CW. They see the writing on the wall. You look at the across the whole year, the biggest television ratings, it's always sporting events. So, you know, they're getting into the sporting game. I know they're going to have ACC football and basketball games, a certain number of those. They had live golf, but now with Liv's merger with the PGA, I think that that's probably going to go away. But regardless, I really, really love this move for Xfinity and bigger purses too, because right, there's more money going into that series now too. So super exciting.
Yeah, it has an injection of cash. I forget the exact number, but it's looking like about almost $500,000 more per race, which could go into add it into the purse. So definitely a benefit for everybody for the Xfinity series. And, you know, this with the more eyes and everything, this is better for sponsorship too. I know, you know, we talk about it all the time, sponsorship is key in this sport. And you look at Xfinity, you look at trucks, those are the areas where sponsorship is really needed. And it's probably the hardest to get because the crowds aren't as big, because the ratings aren't as big. And maybe now with the move to the CW, you're just putting more eyeballs that are able to find it. So I think it's a win-win for everybody involved. I can't wait. I'm super excited. Another thing I'm super excited for, Shane Van Ginsbergen, SVG's
are returning. We're going to have to learn how to say his name. I can't either.
We're going to have to learn soon, because not only is he returning to the Indy Road Course next week, but he says he's working on getting a full-time cup ride next season, and he's super excited about it. He even said he knows that ovals are going to be tough, but I'm excited to see what he could do. Maybe open the door to more Australian V8 supercar drivers coming over in the future. What do you guys think about SVG working on getting that cup ride next year?
Let's go, man. That's super exciting. You know what I'm excited about too is like the merch. I'm definitely going to get me some SVG merch.
Eric already got some at Pocono.
I bought the two shirts. There's a black Chicago street course wind shirt. I just wore it. It's in the laundry. I was going to wear it today because why do you put that news in there? And then I couldn't find. I have it's just a Trackhouse Project 91, it says on the front. It's a patch, and it has a huge, big Shane Van Ginsbergen and his car on the back. It's actually a real sick shirt. So I had a cop that at Pocono. I'm like, SVG's our boy. This is SVG podcast. And it's, you know, I got to get some merch. So, I'm excited for it. I think that it's always good to open the door, and that's what this Project 91 was supposed to do. And now that, you know, he got that victory there, those people in the V8 supercar over in Australia, maybe like instead of the trucks and Xfinity being the feeder system to NASCAR, maybe other forms and series of racing could be the feeder just to all of NASCAR, you know, like Xfinity might be able to become just its own identity. Maybe it's not going to be a feeder system to the cup anymore. You know, maybe you can transition from another series right into the cup with this new car. And it's exciting.
Yeah.
I think just a peek behind the curtain too, is we're all huge SVG fans, because the episode after he won, we had our biggest episode as far as viewership goes. A lot of Aussies, a lot of New Zealanders, listened and watched our podcast. So we thank you. We appreciate it. I loved interacting with some of those folks within the comments section. So, you know, yes, we are huge SVG fans. The Project 91 had a little rub onto our show, and we appreciated it. So we will be rooting him on, you know, all the way as he tries to make his way over here and do it full time next year.
Absolutely. We love the Aussies. We love the Kiwis, and, good on you, you know. NASCAR had a short track package test yesterday. They didn't get the results that they were looking for. There's more work, quote unquote, to be done. They tested a few different splitter configurations and ride heights. Seems like they're still struggling to find the results that they wanted to see, though. What do you guys think? Have you seen anything about the short track package on Twitter the last 2 days after the test yesterday?
I didn't see any results from it. I saw a lot of on track. I saw a lot of the adjustments they were making, taking the diffuser out, messing with the spoiler heights. They left the front splitter on though. It was a lot of information, but I didn't get any of the results. And I saw that you put in the outline there, Whitey, that the results, they kind of weren't happy. They didn't get what they were expecting out of it. And it seems like this needs a little bit more work before they really dial it in.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. They tried it a couple different configurations with no ride height, a set ride height, and then just kind of let teams do whatever they wanted to. And there was a picture of a car. It looked like it was from the late 90s, how high it was. I guess the difference, though, is do you remember back in the day when you'd watch a NASCAR race when the car, when the front end of the nose of the car was really high up and then they'd slow down and it'd dive like that? Well, that created a lot of downforce. It wasn't doing it in this car. It still wasn't horsepower. Enough. Yeah. I don't know if it's horsepower, the aerodynamics of it, like maybe too much airs, like getting around the top of the car. I don't know. I'm not an engineer. I wish I could explain it better, but it was definitely interesting to see. It looked like an old 90s NASCAR, but it definitely didn't drive like one. A lot of work to do with the short track package.
Kudos to NASCAR, though, for hearing the fans, hearing the drivers, hearing the teams, and identifying we don't have that great of a product in our short track circuit. Like, let's fix it. So they're making attempts. Like, I love that they're not just sitting back and resting on their laurels. And, you know, they're trying. So whether they get a result that they like yet or not, they're trying. And if they keep trying, they're eventually going to find something that works. So I do love that aspect of it.
Yeah,
Whitey, did you happen to see anything about tire pressures in that test at all?
No, I didn't see anything because about the tires or anything that.
I just thought of it. Kyle Busch, they struggled with their short track package, and they went with too low of tire pressures, and it kind of threw their car off. Well, this time around at Richmond, they went too high with tire pressure. So I wonder if the tire, too, and like the pressure, like, that's what you mean about being an engineer. Like, you don't know what all is affected and goes into, right? Because it could just be something as simple as tire pressure could make or break this package too.
And you want to know what though? Is Richmond really the short track you want to be testing a new short track package on to begin with? I mean, it's a
you roll through the centers. Yeah. You're not hard on the brakes, like.
It's a short track, like but it's not short track racing, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know. Again, we'll see what comes of it. Maybe I think they should go back up to New Hampshire. I think they should go to Martinsville and test, to be honest with you, a true short track. One piece of it, the last piece of news, which I think is super interesting. Jordan Bianchi of The Athletic wrote a silly season article either yesterday or earlier today with a lot of garage rumors. And the one that stuck out the biggest to me affects Legacy Motorsports. So Eric, I'm interested to see if you heard this or not. John Hunter Nemechek, very possible to replace Noah Gragson in the 42 next season. Noah's contract ends at the end of this year. Toyota loves John Hunter Nemechek. The writing's looking like it's already on the wall with the performance and all that. What do you guys think about John Hunter Nemechek possibly taking over the 42 ride when they move over to Toyota?
I would love it. I'm a big John Hunter fan. I feel like we've talked about him, and I feel like he was kind of became the model for what to do when your Cup Series doesn't go well.
Yeah.
So I'm going to turn this into a positive that I think is a negative here. Do I want to see Noah leave? No, I think that will absolutely crush him. I think that will crush his confidence and all of that. But what happened to John Hunter when he went up to Cup and he didn't do well? Guess what he did? He went back down. He found his rhythm back in trucks. Then he came back Xfinity. Got a little bit more seat time down there. Yeah. And maybe that could be a possible route for Noah too. Look at John Hunter, the guy that might be taking your thing. Look at what he did to get back into the Cup ride. Yeah, you're losing that, but you know, maybe look at the bright side and hey, maybe I do need a little more time down there and a little bit more seat time. But man, do I want it? No, I love Noah. I think Noah's great for the Cup Series, and I think it's kind of a raw deal to just give him, you know, the season he had and then say see you later. I think that is kind of shitty, but all in all, if he could look at the big picture and if someone can explain that to him a little bit of how John Hunter came to this position to begin with, look at his last 3 years. So, maybe Noah could look at that and maybe, take a positive from it.
So, Eric, you know, is right. I have a couple levels of thought process with this. Is one is we all know that Chevy hasn't been nice to LMC. So yeah. to set Noah up for failure from the get-go, he's had a bad season. He's had an awful season. Does he have talent? I think he has all the talent in the world. I think he could be a Cup Series champion at some point in his life. I think it's a mistake letting go of a personality like that when personality means so much in our sport as far as getting eyeballs to your brand. If your brand is on Noah's chest, it's going to get airtime one way or another.
Yeah.
But again, we like to see the silver lining and things on this podcast. Silver lining is maybe go down and get a year or two more in Xfinity. Listen, he did great at Junior Motorsports. We already know Josh Berry's seat's going to be open next year at Junior Motorsports. They haven't filled that yet. And there's rumors now that Brandon Jones, who has been absolute trash for Junior Motorsports, is going to jump back to JGR in the Xfinity series. So there's definitely one, maybe two seats available. Noah might be able to get his number nine back at Dale. I know the Earnhardt family loves Kelly, especially loves Noah. So maybe, hey, you got your experience. It wasn't what you wanted it to be in the Cup Series. You go back down, you have some fun, you get your confidence back. And then when a different opportunity pops up in a year or two in Cup, you jump back up when you're more evolved. He's young. He's still young too. So he's got his whole career ahead of him. So it might suck if that is the case right now for him, especially because he does seem mentally down because he's just been beaten up all year. But maybe the long term, this would be the best thing for him.
Yeah, because you know what? I mean, even look at Noah's Xfinity career. It took a while for him to really take off. Like, it wasn't until that last season at Xfinity where he's really putting races together, where he was going on that tear and that championship run. So maybe another year or two just to, I don't know, just kind of figure things out. You know, I think it's interesting. I remember hearing a quote from Harrison Burton, who had a terrible rookie season last year. Not doing too great in a sophomore season either, but he's starting to kind of figure things out. And he said that the races slowed down for him, you know, where like, it's kind of hard to describe, but you know how sometimes when you're on the highway and you're doing 70, but you're around six cars that are also doing 70. So it feels like you're not really moving that fast at all. You know, I think there's like a psychological thing that happens where when you're racing, like things kind of slow down and you could kind of see the moves a little bit quicker. I wonder if Noah's just not there for the Cup Series yet. I know Cole Custer talked about it a lot, where in the Xfinity Series, he knew what to do. He knew how to put together a race. And when he got to the Cup Series, it was like he was never in a race car before. It was that big of a jump. So maybe Noah just
the race lengths are different. The stages, like it's a whole different animal.
The competition itself, you know,
the
drivers you're competing against are way harder to compete against. They're the best of the best. That's why they're in the Cup Series. So like, maybe he just needs a little bit more time to go back, work on his craft, even though like in the Xfinity Series, he had it, you know, just to get that confidence back, like John Hunter did in the Truck Series.
You hear professional athletes say it all the time, especially in football, jumping from the college level up to pros, how much faster the game is. And it's not just about speed of players. It's about speed of tempo, speed of plays coming in and off the field, everything around you, bigger crowds, louder noises, things like that.
Yeah.
And it just takes adjustment. It takes an adjustment and a special kind of mentality to kind of slow the world down around you so you can concentrate on whatever your task is. And, you know, the cool thing about our sport, you know, NASCAR in particular, is that if you're having a rough go of things, you have the opportunity to take a step back if you need to, relearn some of the things, and then get your confidence back up. Like in other sports, like you can't just go back to college if you need some more time because you're not ready for the pros, right? You're either ready or you're not, and that's it. You get one shot at it, where our sport promotes the idea of, hey, you tried, didn't work, go back down, try to figure it out again. So I love that aspect of our sport.
And I wonder if it's the manufacturer thing that really has a lot to do with it as well.
Toyota pulls the strings a lot.
Yeah, EJ was a part of that Toyota, you know, pipeline coming up. So he's already, you know, well in with the Toyota crew. And like you said, Noah was more, he came up in the Chevy camp. So maybe that does have something to do with it, where it's, you know, let's give John Hunter this. He earned this opportunity again. And I think maybe Toyota might have been pulling some strings.
Yeah, I feel like Toyota probably had a lot to do with this deal, too, to begin with, you know. Do you want to go over some of the other interesting silly season stuff that Jordan wrote about, though? I didn't put it in the notes, but last week we talked about Justin Haley leaving Colleg Racing, going to Rick Ware Racing. Big shock to all of us, kind of. And in the Jordan Bianchi article, he wrote that both Colleg and Justin Haley wanted to stay together. It came down to sponsorship, though. Justin Haley doesn't bring any sponsorship with him. I guess Rick Ware doesn't matter to him. And now it's in the talks where it might be Austin Hill. Austin Hill's looking like a big prospect to go into that Colleg ride. He brings sponsorship with him, but then he even said he's 50-50 whether he wants to do another Xfinity season or go up to Cup. It seems like he might want to stay in the Xfinity series and kind of
and that work would be the smart craft. Thing to do. It would be. I mean, we've talked about John Hunter, now Noah. I mean, you could throw in Harrison Burton as well. I think they all would benefit from staying down in Xfinity longer. I know the whole goal is to get to Cup, and when the opportunity is there, you're going to jump on it. But I think you might see certain drivers now stay a couple years longer in Xfinity because they've watched others fail by going up too soon.
Oh yeah. And it happens a lot. I feel like it happens to at least one rookie every time they move up, you know, out of whatever rookie class they come up. So,
and two, we don't know. I mean, a lot of it comes into play too, where the fit might not be right. You know how like the crew chief and, you know, might not mesh well with where Noah's trying to say this and he can't give him the car, and it's the communication back and forth. And it could just be that maybe he just needs a shakeup where he's just not fitting the mold of what, you know, they're giving him. I mean, you look at Daniel Suarez when he went and took the 19 over when Carl Edwards left Joe Gibbs Racing. That was a great ride. And Suarez had some okay, you know, races in that 19 where he showed like, ooh, Suarez could be someone that he might be a decent race car driver. And then, you know, he gets out of that ride and, you know, goes over to Trackhouse, and it's like, oh, what's going to happen? And maybe sometimes just a change of scenery. Same thing with EJ, you know, leaving. Sometimes you need that shakeup to really solidify and really, hey, this is what I want to do. I want to race. Do you want to race, Noah, or do you want to be a celebrity and this all, yeah, you know, character guy? What do you want to do? If you want to race, then guess what? You better focus on racing or else stuff like this is going to happen. So I don't know. I think in the long run, like Matt said, I think this is going to benefit Noah more than it's going to hurt his NASCAR career.
He's got to get up off of his ass and find that fucking dog.
Yeah, right.
All right, that's all I have for NASCAR news. You guys want to jump into the race weekend?
Yeah.
Let's see. I didn't see any racing this weekend except for the Cup Series race. So truck race in Richmond. Carson Hocevar was your big winner. Did you guys see any of the truck race?
I did not.
No. Saturday was the birthday party, and from the moment my feet hit the ground out of bed, I was go, go, go. So, no, I didn't see anything on Saturday.
Yeah, and then Xfinity race was up at Road America. Sam Mayer getting his first Xfinity win for Junior Motorsports. Eric, I think you were watching that race, weren't you?
Yeah, when it was raining in the parking lot before that Willie Nelson show, when we, you know, we're sitting in our truck, it's absolutely pouring out. So, hey, crack some cold ones, put the Xfinity race on my phone. I synced it up with the MRN. And yeah. I watched probably the last, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 some laps of it. And it was awesome, dude. That race was crazy. I can't recall it right now because I did too much extracurricular from that point till now.
Yeah.
but I do remember being super excited in my truck watching that and texting and telling you guys like, oh my God, that Xfinity race, that was incredible. They put on a show once again. The Xfinity Series putting on a show.
Best race of the weekend, pretty much every weekend. But I thought the Cup race was really good. Chris Buescher led three times for 88 laps. It was 3 hours, 2 minutes, and 13 seconds. We saw three cautions for 21 laps, 18 lead changes among eight different drivers. Your top five: Chris Buescher, Denny Hamlin, Kyle Busch, Joey Logano, and Ryan Preece rounding out the top five. Fellas, what'd you guys think?
It's our NASCAR weekend race grade.
We'll start off with Matt. What'd you think about Richmond this year?
I gave it a B-. Like I said, after the first Richmond race, you know, this is about as good of a race as we'll ever probably see at Richmond, which I don't know if that's necessarily a compliment or not. It's become a tire strategy race, which is fine. You know, we talked about it last week at Pocono where we love our strategy races. I want more out of a quote unquote short track. I don't know. Richmond just doesn't really do it for me. I mean, like I said, a B-, still a good grade, but, yeah. but if that's the ceiling, I don't know. I have more to come on my feelings about Richmond as a whole later on in the show. But for this particular race, like, yeah, we saw passing. It was exciting seeing a new winner, you know, Chris Buescher. You know, I have my ties to Fastenal. So yes, I do have a bias rooting interest, but take that aside, like Chris Buescher himself, he's a funny dude, you know, on social media, if you follow him, he's got that dry Texas humor to him. And he just seems like an all around good dude. So he's an easy guy to root for, as they say. So I was happy to see him win. And then, you know, you've got the playoff cut line where they weren't really, NBC usually does a phenomenal job, but I remember texting you guys during the race, like, why aren't they really talking about the cut line too much? And maybe there just wasn't much to talk about during the race as far as shuffling around. But, I know with four races left, you know, they're really going to be, you know, focusing on that cutoff line. But, the race was a Richmond, was about as good of a Richmond race as you can get.
Matt, I thought it was weird too that the NBC broadcast didn't really mention the playoff cut line at all. Usually have that little graphic throughout the race where it's showing like the guys moving up and down in real time. And looking back, like, well, I didn't see the broadcast from last week, but do they have it during New Hampshire? Like, have they been showing it at all this season?
Oh, yeah. They were talking about it during Pocono. Like, I remember vividly, like, they were talking about it, too. Because I think the one time where there was, like, you know, because of the different strategies at Pocono, they were saying how much, you know, how it's hard to track it because of the strategies are always changing. Look at how different, like, all the positions are and points-wise when strategies are different. So, yeah, I remember that. But, no, they didn't really focus on it this week much at Richmond. So, I don't know.
Well, they see, this is, and I text it back because I think this is one of the reasons why. I think the 99 had such a bad car out there that day. The 34, the strategy he was on, there was no movement. The people that were on the cutoff line, they were running terrible that day. And with all of the strategies that were going on during the race and all the action that was going on, I think that was more of a focus than what the playoff cutoff line was, because the race was actually better than what the cutoff guys were doing. So I think that's kind of where that came from, because they mentioned McDowell on his strategy in the cut line, and Bubba when he was running up front doing really well. And obviously, you know, Junior was talking about Chase and how he had the most speed this week going in, you know, since his injury and stuff. I just think those cutoff line guys, they weren't the focus of the race.
Yeah, even looking at where the cutoff line is right now, it really hasn't changed much from last week. Even the points totals are pretty similar. So, yeah, maybe there just wasn't enough movement for it to really come into play to paint the picture of the race either. You know, a lot of times I feel like they use the cutoff battles to kind of make up for like a lack of action,
right.
It's like, oh, well, battling for 17th right now is Daniel Suarez. He's right on the line, you know, that type of shit. So maybe that was why. But Eric, what was your race grade?
I actually gave it an A-. I enjoyed that race. I thought back on it, and I kind of watched myself watch the race. And there was a lot of times where I'm like, holy shit. Oh, my God. No way.
Yeah.
Oh, you idiot. Oh, no. So, like, this was a race where it was more, maybe not like the racing battles on track, but it was more strategy and pit crews and driver accountability.
Absolutely.
And so when you look at that, and when I was watching it, that is really where the race changed. The pit crews, the driver accountability, and the racing too. It was kind of wild because of the varying strategies. There were some really, really slow cars on the racetrack that were top five cars, but just running a different strategy. People were in the way of other people because they were running a different strategy and they had to get out of the way. Larson, he gave Denny a shot to the back when he was on fresh tires, and Denny was just still trying to hold on to his strategy. He was trying to make it 50-50.
Yeah.
I just think too, you don't always have to have like crazy races. And I go back to what I sent you guys the other day about Brad Keselowski and how he broke down that race. And you know what I thought about it? That was a driver's race. That was a race where you had to manage your tires. You had to be on the pedals. It was like a lot of driver accountability. And you know what? I appreciate that. I appreciate the difference, you know, instead of just the track type, like super speedway, short track, intermediate, there's also different styles you get amongst those as well. And I think we appreciate these races a little bit more because of Pocono and where we were at, you know, last week there and being our home racetrack, strategy wise. But, you know, those pit crews, you could tell that changed the race. And, you know, the drivers getting on and off of pit road changed their day.
So I
really enjoyed seeing that. And those were the moments for me where I went, oh shit, it wasn't a pass. It wasn't a battle on the racetrack. Those were the moments that you had to look for. And I thought overall, it was just a fun and exciting race to watch. And I found myself actually, you know, being excited. And I didn't think that would happen at Richmond.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I gave it a solid B, which is like an A for Richmond anymore. I thought it was pretty good. Obviously, we've seen the track really become more of a strategy race like you guys have been talking about over the last couple of years. And I think with that mindset, it makes you enjoy it more, where it's like, oh, this is going to be about who pits first, long green flag runs, tire management, you know. And I wish it kind of went caution free, because I wanted to see Buescher get that win, but he got it anyways. So in the end, like, that's all that matters. I feel like he had the best car at the end there. And we saw it. I thought it was pretty interesting where we saw Toyota kind of dominate early on, you know, and then either they were running short run cars and they kind of fell behind, or, you know, mistakes on pit road. And then you saw the Fords come to life. But mostly it was RFK, you know, it was Brad and Chris Buescher. And I thought it was really exciting to see all the different strategies. The only thing that sucked for me was I was so tired from the day before. Like, during the bachelor party, we went out golfing. It was like an 85 degree day, very humid, and just the sun took a lot out of me. So like that first and like halfway through the second stage, I was just like scrolling on the phone, trying to pay attention to the strategy. And then I was like, you know what? I know this is a good race right now. I need to put the phone down and just focus on the television. And that's when I really started to enjoy it. I thought it was really good as I was watching it. So maybe Richmond's just one of those tracks you really have to be on top of your game, paying attention, listening to the broadcast, listening to the strategies that are going on to really enjoy it.
I actually said that to Dana. I said, you know, stage one and two, I said, this is the setup for three. I said, it's not a bad race right now. I said, this is just the setup. And, you know, the fun part, like you were saying, Whitey, that I thought was exciting and noticeable, was they all had to work on their cars.
Oh yeah.
And the adjustments that they had to make throughout that race, because it started hot. It was super slick out there. Then clouds came over and they said, oh, the track is going to change. It's getting a little cooler. Some people might have a better car now, like Denny Hamlin. His car started coming to him. He was real loose. well, when the track cools down, it's going to tighten up. That car is going to end up perfect for Denny at the end. So I'm waiting for that to happen. And you could have the perfect race strategy. Your driver still has to execute that to perfection.
Yeah.
And that is where Brad and I think where I kind of appreciated, like, oh man, like, can Buescher execute this to perfection? Can Denny, can, you know, Bubba? I thought for a second there, I'm like, ooh, Bubba, like Bubba's got a really good shot at winning this.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it came down to the drivers and the guys that could have won that race. They screwed up, including the person's shirt that I'm wearing right here.
Oh, yeah, me too. Person's shirt I'm wearing right here. yeah, no, and yeah, I got the
you do have to pay attention though.
Like Daffy Duck
today. In my checkers, that's kind of where I'll go with that.
Yeah, so let's jump into the checkers and wreckers because I feel like we could expand on things here.
Three wide for the lead, one lap to go.
It's this week's checkers and wreckers.
All right, fellas, since we start with Matt for the for the race grades, we'll start with Eric for the checkers and wreckers. What'd you give it to this week?
My checkers, like I was explaining in my race grade, goes to the NBC broadcast, Steve and all the boys in the booth, Junior. Like, it's one of those races where you need them to be on their A game. And I feel like they were, as far as the strategies and who was doing this, who was doing that, but talking about the tires. And I think for the normal fan, I was able to kind of pay attention, you know, on my own, just because I'm a huge fan, but yeah. I just think they did a really, really good job at breaking it down. And I remember saying a couple times to Dana, like, oh, this is night and day just from Fox till, you know, they took over here for the summer stretch. It's night and day. And I was just thinking to myself, like, if this was Fox, now I gave it an A- race grade, I might have given this maybe a lower grade if this was Fox, because I think Fox wouldn't have showed what they needed to show. I think they wouldn't have got the point across like Steve does and Junior does. And it just, to me, I just think they nailed it on the race. And, you know, strategy is hard to call. It's hard to keep up with it. And who better to keep up with it than them? So I had to give my checkers to the boys up in the booth.
You guys were obviously boots on the ground in Pocono last week. So, you know, I didn't get to watch the broadcast, but it's the same thing, you know, Pocono again, strategy race. It's handled with such grace with those guys where I'm happy that the Pocono race is as at the point of the schedule where it's at, because if it was handled by Fox, I feel like it wouldn't get the love and the attention and the coverage that the NBC crew gives. So yeah, I think I said it last week too, you know, I think the NBC coverage just really, really helps out strategy races like that.
Yeah.
Well, too, we said like there wasn't a lot of battles on the racetrack, right? But stage two, Brad kind of ran away with it. His strategy, he was out front, and for the lead, for the win in stage two, it wasn't a battle. But what did they do? They went to where the battles were, the lucky dog, Larson and Bowman.
Yeah.
They went to that battle, and that was amazing.
That was
an incredible battle for the lucky dog. You think Fox would have shown the battle for the lucky dog, or would they have showed Keselowski dominating up front and not showing that? They kept the excitement. They showed where the excitement is. Okay, they knew stage two, lackluster kind of at the end. Brad's strategy's running away with this. There's not a lot of excitement up front. Go to the excitement. Bring the excitement to the fans. Let them see something that's actually going on. So that battle at the end there, I thought that was something that they do that Fox doesn't do. And it was just a breath of fresh air.
The other thing that they do with their strategy race coverage too is like they'll go at each other like, oh, I think this strategy is going to be the one that prevails. Yeah. No, I think this one is.
And kind it's of
like,
battle they, it you out. Know,
but it's, they're as excited.
As they're excited, they're like going back and forth and giving their opinions about each strategy. You're learning about the strategies too, so you can form your own opinion, and it just makes it like so much more exciting. Like at the end of the race, like, well, which strategy is going to win? It's handled with such grace with them. I love that crew.
I know Larry Mack is America's crew chief, and for good reason. But I think Fox really fails in not having him in the booth for races like this, where because you need a crew chief breaking these types of strategies down. And I think Steve Letarte just does such a great job explaining strategy to just the layperson, someone who the first timer, where it's like, oh, well, this is why they're pitting a little bit earlier to try to jump and get a couple extra seconds out of that set of tires and stuff, where it does, it sucks you in, where I forget, it was in the third stage before Reddick locked up his tires or hit that box getting in, where I was watching. I'm like, okay, well, who's going to pit first? And then it was Buescher. I'm like, all right, well, everyone's now they're just following Buescher because he's going to get he's going to catch even bigger lead, you know, now that he's fresh tires. And then those guys are talking about where I'm like, yeah, same page. I'm getting it. I'm picking it up, you know. So, like, yeah, they do a great job. How about your wreckers, Eric? What's your wreckers for the weekend?
Ooh, my wreckers goes to, you know, we talked about the cutoff line before and who was there and who needs to kind of step it up. And that was Trackhouse. And Suarez on the cut line needs to step it up. But also, Ross Chastain, hello, where are you? Where you been, buddy? You non-existent, running 22nd in the honestly, the last couple of weeks, I'm pretty sure I saw it was he's been running in the 20s. What is going on over there? Trackhouse, they either missed on something is up over there. And this was a race that Suarez needed and Trackhouse needed to gain speed. You're going into the playoffs. I could see maybe the one trying some stuff. That's what I thought about the 24 as well. I thought maybe this was a race for some of the teams that had wins and why you saw some of them struggling and, ooh, why is Hendrick doing so bad? What's going on with the 24? What's going on with this guy? Why are they? I think there were teams doing a little playing around, and that is something that Trackhouse couldn't afford to do in my eyes, being that the 99 is on the cutoff line. And Ross Chastain hasn't been running well, whether or not they are trying stuff or not. You need momentum going into the playoffs. That is where we saw Christopher Bell. We saw Slick Willie. You go on these runs and these tears, and now is when you need that. You're at that cutoff line. That 99 just flat out had a terrible, terrible car come off of that hauler. So did the one. And I feel like this was a race that they needed to basically, you know, keep that edge on the nine and those guys that he's battling at that cutoff line. Chase is only 40 points out. He's making it on points easy now, I think. These next four races, it's in his wheelhouse, but McDowell, also in his wheelhouse, who's earned the most points at road courses this season so far. Man, like Matt said, this is where the battle's going to start heating up. But if those guys on that cutoff line don't do anything in these next 4 weeks and keep losing those points and not gaining, then is it might just become a non-factor if it just stays the same going forward. Man, Trackhouse, they couldn't afford that bad day they had.
Ross Chastain's the weirdest story, the most bizarre story of the last couple of weeks, because he went from like being the story every single week, the first 15 weeks of the season, to just kind of disappearing and just, like you said, like running in the mid-teens and running in the 20s and just, like, I don't know how many times they talked about Ross Chastain over the past two or three races. Like, it's not much. And the most they talked about Ross in the past couple of weeks is when they were comparing what Denny did to the 5 car at Pocono to what Denny did to the 1 last year. That's the most they talked about Ross in the past couple of weeks. So, yeah, maybe he is trying stuff out, but I don't know. Momentum's a huge thing in this sport. You're going to want to turn that on sooner than later.
Yeah. And, Suarez has just had an awful 2 weeks, wrecking out at Pocono and then, yeah, just having an awful day yesterday. He's now 34 points below the cutoff line. Chase Elliott's 40 points below. And like Eric said, you know, we're going into Chase's wheelhouse. Now we have two road courses coming up back to back
and a super speedway.
And you want to know what? The gap for Suarez just getting bigger and bigger. Bowman was in the hunt for the points. Now he's out. Like, I don't even know how far behind he is. But even, honestly, too, like, I feel like all the Chevys really struggled at Richmond. I mean, where was Hendrick Motorsports? You saw Bowman and Larson battling for the lucky dog position, you know?
Chase was the best Chevy, and he even didn't have a great race.
Yeah, so I mean, Kyle Busch, the only Chevy in the top five, and he worked hard for it. You know, they really had to adjust on his car and stuff. So I don't know, Chevy just out to lunch at Richmond, I feel like. How about you, Matt? What's your checkers and wreckers for the weekend?
So Eric's wreckers, you know, talking about you know, the cutoff line and drivers on south of the cutoff line. Well, I'm going to talk about a driver that's north of the cutoff line. My checkers is going to Bubba Wallace, and yes, he finished 12th. So you're probably confused on why I chose him as my wreckers, but Bubba accumulated 41 points, which was tied with Ryan Preece for fourth most accumulated points at Richmond this past weekend. Bubba led 80 laps, and he finished inside the top five on both stages. And now he sits plus 54 above the cutoff line, which is big, man, especially because, like, we're not, like Eric just alluded to, we're kind of not seeing a lot of the movement on that cutoff line, where 54 points – yes, it could be evaporated in a race or two, but he can also build on that as well. So just a solid points day for that team. And, you know, I know they'd like a win, but this team has to be a team that's going to continue to hunt points for the last four races of the regular season, just continue to try to get those stage points and create that buffer, because I don't think we're getting 16 different winners. I mean, we're not. How many? We have 12 or 13 different winners right now?
12 now, right?
12 now.
Busher was 12.
So we have four open spots, which mean, and we have four races left, and I don't believe we're going to get four new race winners in the next four races. So there's going to be points that gets at least a driver or two, or most likely three into the playoffs. So,
bless you.
Oh, I tried stifling that sneeze since I started talking. I couldn't do it anymore. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Bless you. Tuesday show, baby.
Tuesday, baby. But just a great points day from Bubba on that 23 team.
Yeah, to your point, he gained almost 30 points since last week at Pocono. So huge gain on that, especially when we're getting that close to the playoffs. And there hasn't been much movement. How about your wreckers? What's your wreckers?
My wreckers goes to Richmond Raceway having two dates. And again, I know there's two tracks that we really pile on, Phoenix and Richmond. And Phoenix did have a good race. We've already alluded to that this past weekend. But well, first of all, when a racetrack ceiling, in my mind, is like a B grade, it doesn't need a second date. When the fans don't show up, the racetrack doesn't deserve a second date. You know, for me personally, in my opinion, it's a bottom two or three track that's on the Cup schedule. I'd like to see an Iowa get a Cup date, give a Cup date back to Road America. Those folks didn't complain about how hot it was on the 4th of July last year when it was scorching hot out there. You know, they showed up in droves and, you know, everywhere that you looked around that whole facility last year, there were fans. You know, give a Cup date to, you know, a track that I think deserves it a little bit. You know, we see tracks like Pocono and others get a second Cup date ripped away from them because of maybe poor attendance. Maybe it's lack of excitement on the racetrack in the past, whatever it might be. You know, you see it come down to, you know, with these tracks that are now getting one date that had two at one point. You look at Dover as another one. The stands are filling up. We're getting better racing. And yeah, I don't know. I don't believe that Richmond deserves that second date that they get.
Yeah, we kind of talked about it a little bit last week in the pickle lane, but I'm getting more and more to the point where I'm like, I don't think I need two dates at any track except for anywhere, like Daytona, Talladega, Charlotte. Give me the Roval and the 600. And I don't know. I can't really think of anything else besides that.
I mean, how wild is it that the two Richmond races, though, were completely different?
Yeah.
Went completely different ways. Like, it's... And then this is where we talked about this. It might have been even last week where we talked about, you know, moving some tracks like Martinsville out of the spring to kind of give them the hot slick where you need it, kind of, you know. So the spring race versus the summer race, it's sometimes that matters, which date to keep, which one to get rid of too, because they were two completely different races that we saw. So, I'm in agreement. I was kind of really – I didn't want to, like, kind of – hone on it, but the fans there, man, I saw them coming around a couple of times, and those bleachers, they did not look like they were full.
And you know what? For the second year in a row, listening to Sirius XM, one of the biggest complaints is it's too hot to go to the racetrack, which I think is absolutely ridiculous because we've gotten to the racetrack in 95 degrees last year at Pocono. We filled the stands, and then the next week or a couple weeks later at Richmond, they had the same issue that they had this past weekend where people just weren't showing up. Like, I just don't get it. I think if you do take a date away, it kind of puts a fire in people's ass to like, oh, we better go before we lose this, you know? Yeah. So, and a lot of people have been complaining that they lost the night race in the playoffs and everything like that. But again, attendance wasn't that great, and the racing wasn't that great in the playoffs. And it's unfortunate, too, because Richmond used to put on really good racing back in the day. I don't know if it was the sealer that they used to use. I know they used to use a sealer on the track. But some of those early 2000s Richmond's races, like go back and watch Tony Stewart's first win at Richmond. It's a really great race, you know? So the potential is there. I don't know if it's the car or the track or what, but something needs to be fixed down in Virginia. Matt,
I think this second race, the hot slick racetrack, is why it was a way better race than in the spring, in my eyes.
I think so too. Yeah.
I think this car in general produces better racing when it's hot and slick like that.
Yeah. How about you, Matt? You got anything else to add or no?
No, that's it. Like I said, I don't want to keep dumping on a track that we've, over the couple years that we've been doing this podcast, we've given them their fair share of shots. You know, I'd hate to, you know, honestly, that was kind of, me not really having anything else to wreck. So I just, it irks me as much as I love seeing the full stands. It irks me when the fans don't show up to a track because, I long for the days that Pocono had their two dates and I wish they still did, but yeah.
But we've seen the benefit of losing a date too, you know? Yep.
And so. I get it. And now I'm cool with it too. You know, I'm fine with it. Sometimes it doesn't work out schedule wise, but you know, the track and the fans show up to those single date races. It's proven.
My checkers and wreckers. I'm going to start with my records first. I'm giving it to 23-11, just execution, getting them again. Like you said, like Bubba Wallace had a car that could win. Tyler Reddick had a car that could win, and the execution just wasn't there. They both led a ton of laps. Bubba led 80 laps. Reddick led 81 laps. Hitting an orange box going into the pits, like that ended his day essentially for Reddick. And then a loose jack pump kind of ended Bubba's day. Did they finish in the top 16, I guess? Yeah, they did. It was a good day, but it could have been a whole lot better for each of them. And it's just that little stuff that we've seen all season of 23-11, whether it be driver error, pit road error. I just want to see both of them complete a race and, you know, really fucking – the car speed is there. Can I tell you, I looked the other day, Reddick hasn't qualified outside of the top 15 all season long. And he was only in like 15th once. Other than that, he's pretty much in the top 10 every single week qualifying. The speed is there. The execution just failing. But
What I missed out on, Whitey, because of that I was really, really excited to see. And I thought I was going to get it at the end.
What's that?
The boss man versus the 45 and the 23. They said all three of those cars, they were set up exactly the same.
Yep.
And they all had speed. Could you imagine at the end, what would they have done? Like the three, like what, how exciting would that have been? Is Denny going to dump his own driver? Will one of his drivers dump Denny?
Yes.
Like, that is where I was building during the race where I'm like, oh man, this is going to be good. That is what these strategy races kind of got me. And I was like, oh man, those three cars at the front, what would they have done, man?
Any one of them would do exactly what they needed to do.
Dude, you know what got me though was so Buescher pitted first, right? And then Reddick waited. Yeah. A lot of guys pitted. I'm like, Reddick, what are you doing? I wanted to see how that strategy was going to play out. Again, I was getting excited about the strategy of it all. I'm like, oh, will he be able to jump him? I don't know. Maybe he will. Just getting robbed of good battles, like you said, because Bubba was racing Denny really hard. He's raced him really hard in the past.
Bubba was racing everybody hard. Yeah. Dude, he was bumping everybody. He bumped Chase out of the way a couple times too.
He knows what needs to be done. Yeah. He knows what needs to be done. It's why it was my checkers.
And at this point, you have four races to win your way into the playoffs and lock yourself in, because look at last year. Came down to Blaney and Martin Truex Jr., who were, you know, had how many, like a hundred points each, you know, but there was one spot left. You know, we see a surprise winner in Michigan or the Indy Road Course or Watkins Glen. Daytona is it. You know, like it things could get real exciting real quick in this playoff battle. But yeah, I don't know. I had to give it to him. I just thinking about what day could have happened. Mm-hmm. You know, could have been a real exciting finish. I'm glad Chris Buescher won. I really am. And that's why I gave RFK in general my checkers. They were both very good. And it's not shocking either. We've seen this coming. We've been talking about it for about a year now, ever since the playoffs last year, where RFK really started to catch fire. Chris Buescher won at Bristol. I didn't think that was a fluke either. That was kind of a weird race. But just in general, the strides that Brad Keselowski has been made, and I have to give an extra checkers to Brad Keselowski for having faith in Chris Buescher to keep him. That was the first thing he did when he walked through the door. He re-signed Chris Buescher's contract. He's always praising his abilities, and like Eric said, you know, we saw a driver's race this weekend where you had to be on top of your game every single lap, because it was all about tire management and all that stuff, all those little things as a driver that you can control. I don't think we're going to see Chris Buescher become a threat every week this season, maybe even half of next season. But I mean, he's only 30 years old. I think in the next 5 years, he's going to become a serious threat for wins and deep playoff runs.
And if it's not at RFK, he's going to be one of those guys that's always going to be attached to like the next best open seat. Yep. You know, the 11 is eventually going to be open. The 19 is eventually going to be open. You know, we're talking within the next 5 years for both of those seats. Those are two primary seats. So you never know.
Yeah. I mean, thinking about some of the older guy, Kyle Busch, how long does he really have going, you know? Eric Almirola. What the hell's going on with Eric Almirola right now?
Nobody knows. I don't think he knows.
Although I think at this point, RFK is a step up from Stuart Haas Racing, unless your name is Kevin Harvick. So I would stay put in that Ford camp right away. But that was my checkers and wreckers. Let's go over some race notes. We talked about Chris Buescher. He led three times for 88 laps. Denny Hamlin, he led four times for 20 laps. I thought, like we said, Denny had a great car. The Toyotas were, you know, class of the field for the first half of that race before Brad Keselowski took the lead. Let's see. Third, I thought this was interesting. So Kyle Busch didn't have the best car early on, but they worked their way to a top three. Kind of touched on that. Brad Keselowski, he led twice for 102 laps. And then Martin Truex Jr. led three times for 18 laps. And besides those guys, of course, Bubba Wallace and Tyler Reddick both led 81 and 80 laps respectively. So those are the big leaders all day long. But was there anyone in the middle of the pack that you guys noticed? I know we talked about just the Hendrick struggles a little bit there with Kyle Larson and Alex Bowman battling out on the lucky dog to stay out there. But anything?
I mean, you have to shout out, you know, Ryan Preece. What a
day.
Ryan Preece was in the top five almost all day long. That for him and that 41 team, we talk about how bad that they struggled and Harvick is the only one over there. Well, guess what, man? Preece, in the last couple of weeks, you know, like you said earlier, sometimes you have to figure it out. And he hasn't had the greatest season. And, you know, he's had his struggles. But, man, I think he's going to be another one that is like Chris Buescher, where once they start figuring it out, I think he's going to be somebody at these short tracks where he is an ace at. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to come into his own as a driver. And man, what a day, because that's a hard race. But short track, you have to know, you have to manage your tires. That's right in his wheelhouse. And I was very impressed with Ryan Preece in that 41, knowing the struggles of SHR. And he was up there all day.
And Watch out for Preece at Bristol.
Yeah, he ran Martinsville in the spring really, really well. He had a winning car there until a pit road mistake. I'm trying to remember, how many seasons was he away from the Cup Series. Was it just one or was it two?
I think it's two because Ricky's been in that 47 for 2 years.
Yeah, but he was in the 37. Yeah, he was in the 37 until 2021.
Oh, yeah, the 37. The Bush's Beams car, dude. I love that car.
Yeah, so that 2021 car, he was charterless. He had to qualify his way into all those races, and he had a couple top 10s, top 5s during that that season, too. So I think maybe just shaking some of the dust off. Again, Stuart Haas Racing struggles and Ford struggles in general.
Dude, the 19 got screwed in the beginning of that race when Ricky ran into him. I think that really hurt whatever in that 19 car because he went from starting in the top 10 to way back, and he didn't really rebound until a little bit later on when he went extra long in stage two.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you were paying attention for that. And Steve Letarte was like, Truex, what are you doing? You're about to go two laps down.
Yeah.
And I don't think... You know, this is, I forgot all about this. Steve Letarte was blown away that Truex did not go because McDowell was on the same thing. And McDowell went a lap down. McDowell got screwed on that same strategy. He didn't know how Truex managed that car and his tires to keep up and stay in the top 10 in that stage two, because he shouldn't have been able to do that. And somehow, some way, he was able to drive and keep himself up there. That just goes to the talent that he has behind the wheel.
Yeah, because wasn't he on the one-stop strategy?
Yes.
Him and McDowell and everyone else was on a two-stop. And McDowell fell like a rock. I remember
like
that.
Like a rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was working out for him for a little bit there, and then he just burned up his shit. But again, like, how good is Martin Truex Jr. at short track racing too, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, certain tracks do play into these guys' strengths. Ryan Preece, I mean, everyone talks about his modified career up in New England and stuff, like, so tire management, you know, that was the name of the game on Sunday. What's up, Matt?
Ryan Preece, real quick. Ryan Preece ran two Cup races last year. He ran three Xfinity races last year and 10 truck races. So he wasn't full time anywhere last year. It was just 1 year he was out of the Cup Series full time.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that was that Rick Ware deal, right? Where he ran a couple races for them.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Preece has been out of the car. I think compared to the rest of Stuart Haas, Eric Almirola, and Chase Briscoe, I mean, he's not doing too much worse than those guys. So,
He was with, he did Rick Ware deal for a couple races in the Cup Series last year. He did for Xfinity Series, he ran for BJ McLeod and then David Gilliland in the Truck Series for a couple races. So,
yeah. So, yeah. Good top five. We'll see what happens in Martinsville in the playoffs. See if he could continue a good short track streak. I think that's the next short track we have going on, right? Oh, no, Bristol. Like you said, Matt, watch out for him at Bristol. Let's see. That's all I really have for the race notes. It's tough on a Tuesday to remember back to Sunday. It really is.
I think we hit the nuts of it all, you know?
Well, one thing we didn't hit, the BJ McLeod piece. So here on the Bumper Run podcast, everyone loves to talk about the winner, Christopher Buescher. But we also like to talk about the last place driver, and it was BJ McLeod. This time he finished five laps down, but he was still running, which I don't think we've had a last place running car all season long. Usually it's like, oh, they
2021 Richmond was the last time every car finished running. I think they said when nobody finished, like, was out of the race. I think it was Richmond in 2021.
Do you guys know who won that race
in Richmond 2021? Was that probably Alex Bowman? No, was it? I thought it was Bowman in the fall.
Greg Biffle.
I'm going to be 100% honest with you. Do you know what just happened there?
What's that?
I would have said the punchline of Greg Biffle about 10 seconds earlier. I forgot his name.
Wow. I blanked. Tuesday.
It's Tuesday, boys.
Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
Can you look up who won the 2021 race? I think it's Bowman. I think he pumped up his tires. So. Anyways, let's see. I don't have a pick lane this weekend, so let's wrap it up with the weekend preview. I'm not going to hit the button. We are heading to the Irish Hills of Michigan. I couldn't find the button quick enough. Xfinity on track Saturday, 3:30 on NBC for the Cabo Wabo 250. which I didn't even know Sammy Hagar still had Cabo Wabo going on. And then Cup on Track Sunday, 2:30 on USA for the Firekeepers Casino 400. To go over our picks from last week, I won Richmond picking Kevin Harvick. He got me 33 points. Matt picked Kyle Larson. He got you 18 points. And Eric, now I know why you gave Trackhouse your wreckers. You picked Ross Chastain, and he got you a whopping 13 points, which pushed you down into the third slot in the standings.
Oh, I'm doing so bad. Yeah. I'm doing so bad this year.
Right now, Matt is winning with 740 points. I am in second with 659 points. And then, Eric, you have 613 points. So the hunt is still there, at least for second, between me and you. Matt is kind of running away with it. We are 22. Oh, I'm sorry. But we're heading to Michigan. Who are we going to pick? Matt, or no, Eric, you go first. I'm sorry. I was jumping ahead.
Well, this here is a Ford-dominated race.
Yeah.
I think the winner is going to come out of the Ford camp and... You know, it happened again on Sunday. And I've said this, if you're a listener of this show, you know how many times I've said this season, Joey Logano is not talked about at all.
No.
And he finished in the top five. And I remember when he was at the end, I go, where did he come from? He was in second. I go, what? Non-existent all day. And then he gets top fives. Last year, I thought that was like the craziest championship win ever. So lackluster, so disappointing, because he didn't have the greatest season, and he just finds ways to scum himself into these top fives and these wins. And I think this is a week where the Ford camp, and I think Logano, I just think he's going to be around at the end. And I think that 22, you know, I think this is where playoffs are starting. He knows what he has to do. And I think there's a little switch in that 22 when the playoffs come around. And that team tends to dominate the playoffs. So I'm going to 22 with Joey Logano.
I like it. How about you, Matt? Who are you going with?
Made a couple good points there, Eric. You know, Michigan is Ford territory. It's in Ford's backyard. So I am going to go with the Ford. I'm going to go with a guy that this time next year is going to be fishing over at Lake Nacogdoches. I'm going to be going with Kevin Harvick.
And that's a good choice, because that's who I was going to pick. Ford has won the last five races at Michigan. Kevin Harvick has four of those five wins.
I know who else I would have picked. Someone who's getting hot.
Who's getting hot?
On the Harvick train, I saw a stat where out of the last 18 races at Michigan, he's won 11 of them.
Really?
That's a lie.
I don't know. If Twitter might be lying to me,
no,
but
you want
to? It was an outrageous stat that I read. Or it might have been Ford. Was it Ford?
It has to be Ford.
It's Ford, because before that, Larson had two wins back to back. Kenseth had a win. Gordon had a win. And Logano had a win. That goes back to 2013. Now, Michigan's always been a single. Oh no, I'm not counting June. Hold on. When did we stop going in June? The Harvick won in June 1 year, Logano. Nah, that can't be right.
No, Harvick has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Harvick has 5 Michigan wins under his belt.
Do you know who won the 2013 spring race though at Michigan for Roush Fenway Racing?
Greg Biffle.
He did win. let's see. I want to pick a Ford in the worst way. I really do.
There's somebody wearing his shirt right now. If Eric took the four.
You want to what? I want to pick Brad Keselowski. Does RFK?
I was just supposed to pick Kyle Busch. I feel like Kyle Busch is good on these long tracks this too.
Brad's been sniffing. He's been building up to it. They've got the momentum.
You want to know what, though? Who won in Auto Club? Kyle Busch. I'm going with Kyle Busch. Okay. I think, you want to know what? Coming off of third place at a short track, Randall Burnett does not put together a good short track car. I watched Reddick struggle at short tracks for years. Kyle even said it himself. Randall puts together a great fucking 2 mile car at Auto Club. I think he puts another one together at Michigan this weekend. I'm going with Kyle Busch. Thank you, Eric, because I had no idea who I was going to pick. Who will it be? I don't know. We'll see. We're 22 races into the 2023 season, and we have 12 different winners locked into the playoffs. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Kyle Busch, William Byron, Joey Logano, Tyler Reddick, Kyle Larson, Christopher Bell, Martin Truex Jr., Denny Hamlin, Ryan Blaney, Ross Chastain, and the newest addition, Chris Buescher, all locked themselves in. On the cutoff, we have Kevin Harvick with 182 points to the good. We have Brad Keselowski with 151 points to the good. We have Bubba Wallace, 54 points to the good. And Michael McDowell, 18 points to the good, battling out with Ty Gibbs, who is minus 18 points. AJ Allmendinger behind him with minus 22 points. Daniel Suarez with minus 34. And Chase Elliott minus 40 points on the cutoff line for the playoffs. Who will it be in Michigan? Will Kevin Harvick get his millionth win and his first win of the season? Lock himself in for sure. Will it be
Joey Logano?
Joey Logano getting his second win of the season. It's a Tuesday. Or will it be Kyle Busch getting his fourth win of the season? The more I think about it, the more I'm liking that pick. We will see this Sunday on track, 3 p.m. on USA for the Cookout 400, and we'll break it on down for you yet again on a Tuesday, boys. I got a text message. I got to work Monday night. I got to run a contest in the 7 o'clock hour, so I don't want to hold
you guys
up.
Doing a fourth Tuesday in a row, so, or a third Tuesday in a row?
We're doing a third Tuesday. I apologize. I swear to God, eventually we'll get back to Monday shows. But until then, for Matt the Statman Riley, for Eric Daytona Ron, I'm Michael D. White saying have a good night.